It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, attorneys at law, and Cecil Harvell is in the studio with us. Good morning, Cecil.
Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Doing well. What are we talking about today?
Good. Ben, let's continue to talk about that document called a holographic will.
Mm-hmm.
We mentioned that last week on the program. We primarily talked about proving the existence of a holographic will when in fact it's lost or cannot be found.
Mm-hmm.
But let's go back and define this document, talk about it, and then I want to share some examples with our listeners this morning. Now, Ben, a holographic will is enforceable in the state of North Carolina. It is a will that is written entirely in the handwriting of the testator,
mm-hmm,
or the person who has died. It is found in their personal effects, their professional papers, if you will,
mm-hmm,
a valuable place. And it again is written completely in the manuscript of the testator. It cannot be typewritten on a computer. It cannot be written by another individual,
mm-hmm,
sitting with the testator. It must be written completely in the handwriting of the testator. And of course, it would show testamentary intent, things such as, when I die, I want the following things to happen, things of that nature. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't require witnesses, unlike a typewritten will, but it does require at the time that it's admitted to the courts that witnesses come forward who affirm that they recognize the handwriting,
mm-hmm,
of the testator,
right, right,
and that is his or her manuscript. And they affirm to this, and then assuming that there are witnesses who can affirm to the handwriting, and assuming it shows some testamentary intent found amongst the valuable papers and effects, written entirely in the handwriting of the testator, then of course the courts will admit it to probate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, Ben, that's the easy part, if
yeah,
you will,
yeah,
okay? The problem is that holographic wills tend to almost uniformly not appropriately, if you will, or with any kind of detail or legal specificity, do they happen to dispose properly of the assets.
Right.
And so, of course,
in other words, the language is not going to be
specific enough in most handwritten wills. So, of course, you know, our listeners hear me loud and clear saying we don't recommend this. And we really don't, because you do not have the counsel of a lawyer who can help you with some of the contingencies. And it's just astonishing, Ben, how we lawyers do think about these things, and most of us who are not lawyers really don't. Now, let me give you an example of that. Yesterday in my office, wonderful couple in the office, you know, they have their one daughter. She's in her young 30s. She's just gotten married. She doesn't have any children. They, of course, have moved from a different state. They've moved to North Carolina. They're getting their affairs in order, which they're greatly to be commended for that. And clearly, they came in wanting, of course, estate planning documents that say everything to each other and then,
mm-hmm,
to their wonderful one daughter.
Right.
Well, I had then asked the question, well, your daughter currently doesn't have any children. So what if the three of you, you know,
mm-hmm,
go to dinner one night and don't make it back? What,
right,
if the three of you go on a trip and don't make it home? Where do your assets go if there is no daughter? And of course, there just was, you know, a dearth of silence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Lots,
right,
of smiles,
think of that,
shrugging shoulders, and they just had not thought of that. They, and of course, I don't blame them. Who wants to think about your one and only daughter,
mm-hmm,
not being living? But these things do happen. And so a lawyer is going to think about that and,
mm-hmm,
bring to the table the discussion of these contingencies. So they worked through it a bit, and, you know, she has some brothers, and he has a sister, and they slowly but surely put together a plan that would have a contingency provision in it,
mm-hmm.
that would allow for the disposition of the assets if something happened to their one daughter. Now, later in the day, I was presented with a holographic will that has, in fact, passed muster enough to go to the probate court. However, the clients now, as would be expected, have major issues with the handwritten document and its lack of legal specificity, and therefore they were told that they would have to go and have a lawyer. And they have found our law firm, and they were in my office yesterday. The interesting thing in this file, Ben, is that the client, the testator, you know, he did own property, land. Mm-hmm. He owned two parcels of land, actually. And he, you know, instructs his executor as best as he can in his own handwriting and without legal counsel to sell these properties and to distribute them out to a charity. The problem is that without very specific legal language in the powers section of a will, mm-hmm. relative to the statutes in North Carolina, the executor cannot just sell real property.
Right.
And so what has happened in this file is we now are going to need to involve the court, petition for hearing, put appraisals on record, show the offer to purchase on the property that it's reasonable, that it meets, you know, commercial standards, mm-hmm. and get an order from the court to allow this executor to sell the property. I also happen to notice in this holographic will that it did not use the word so much executor, but it said such and such, this lady is to handle my affairs,
mm-hmm.
which clearly probably means that he intended her to be his executor, and she is acting as the executor. But I noticed, of course, Ben, that there was no alternate.
Right.
To her.
Right.
There was no alternate.
Yeah, and that poses a problem.
And this lady is extremely frail and elderly at this point. And bless her soul, she is attempting to handle mm-hmm. this estate. But thank goodness she has, you know, a son and a daughter-in-law who both came to the appointment, who I might add did most of the talking.
Mm-hmm.
Because she, at her age and at her station of health, is really not able to handle mm-hmm. this estate.
Right.
And particularly under the facts of a holographic will.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, of course, couldn't help but think, well, what if this wonderful lady were not with us?
Mm-hmm.
There would have been no alternate in the holographic will at all. And then there we would be at that point with yet another issue.
Right.
The will also is not clear as to who the charity is.
Mm-hmm.
There could be a question mm-hmm. about the identity of this charity.
Mm-hmm.
When we in our office are instructed by clients to leave estates to charities, we contact the charity
mm-hmm.
and we get their official legal name, many times, and their official home office address.
Right.
And sometimes even their federal ID number, so as to make it absolutely clear what this charity happens to be and any arm of this charity.
A number operate under similar names.
You know, the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, these all have different, you know, subsidiaries, if you will, and that might not be the right word, but they have
a lot of different veteran groups.
Lots of different arms of their charitable work.
Yeah.
Yes. And so it has to be clear what one means by that.
Yeah.
This holographic will is not clear. And when I ask this elderly lady and her children, what, thank goodness they were able to tell me, well, his, the dead individual, mm-hmm. his parents had made contributions to this particular charity.
Mm-hmm.
And that they had record of those contributions. And therefore, it would seem that the intent is mm-hmm. that the estate will go to that same charity. After all, that is the one that his parents gifted to.
Right, right.
So
makes a lot of sense.
That will help us.
Mm-hmm.
Is it absolutely definitive? Can I, as this elder woman's lawyer, she's serving as the executor, can I give her a 100% assurance that will not have any challenge?
Mm-hmm.
The assets, of course, as I mentioned before, are real property, two real properties
mm-hmm.
in one of our local townships here.
Yeah.
And any property, Ben, as we know, land and a home has some value to it.
All right. So we're going to come back in a moment. We'll talk more. If you have questions about holographic will, you can call us too. 800-818-2255, 247-7282, 353-4674 as we continue on here on Coastal Daybreak and Let's Talk Legal. And welcome back to the program here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station. Let's Talk Legal with Harbell and Collins. We have a caller standing by who wants to ask Cecil a question. Bob in Moorhead City. Hi, Bob. How are you?
Hello, Mr.
Mr. Harbell.
Yeah, Mr. Attorney? Yeah. My sister-in-law's got a will.
Mm-hmm.
Can she handwrite a change to that will and it be legal?
Good question.
That's... That would not be advisable. We see that a lot. In other words, that would be a codicil. And the answer to that question, Bob, is that the codicil will have to be of equal dignity, if that makes sense. It's legal words, but will have to be of equal dignity to the last will and testament. For instance, her current last will and testament is a typewritten will with three witnesses under notary, maybe, or two witnesses under notary.
Yes.
Right.
Okay.
This would need to be a separate document, too, right?
Well, it would. Yeah, it would be. You're talking about a separate document versus just making a change on the typewritten will.
Right.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. I don't recommend that, Bob. I mean, I guess I need to know more what the change is, but I can tell you this, that if she is going to make a change by handwriting on a separate document, then it needs to be written, and it needs to have two witnesses and be notarized so that it is of equal dignity to the typewritten will.
Good. Okay. Makes sense. Thank you very much.
You're all welcome. Right.
Thanks, Bob. But again, why is that not advisable at all?
Well, because it presents, of course, it would depend to some degree what the change is,
mm-hmm.
The modification that she's making. I mean, if she's just changing an executor because her sister or her brother died and she's
right.
now, you know, and she's mm-hmm. now making George versus Sue because Sue died, you know, a few months ago, then that's a pretty logical change.
Mm-hmm.
But if she's changing the disposition of her estate in some way,
right,
Ben, then we need to keep in mind that the original document will go to probate,
mm-hmm.
as will the second codicil go to probate.
Mm-hmm.
And the two then are interpreted based on their four corners in totality.
Mm-hmm.
So when you set forth now, you know, inherently, I mean, there it is right in front of all the public record to see a potential conflict.
Mm-hmm.
I one day had my estate going to these people. Now I have it going to this person. person or people. These are the kinds of things that can create major issues in estates.
If the change is, say, it's the disposition of an asset, just say a car, for example, but the car no longer exists, and they don't really have to make that change, do they?
They don't. Any kind of any kind of testamentary document, many times we get the question, Ben, you know, well, don't I need to name my accounts? Don't I need to say that this CD at this particular banking institution goes here, this particular car, this vehicle, this particular stock, if I own stock in Duke Power or Caroline, you know, whatever the case might be? And the answer to that question is no, because those things change. The name of the bank, the type of car, even the name of the stock, can change. And so, that to have that kind of specificity can be cumbersome and a problem actually in an estate. There can be, again, interpretation issues. It's best not to name, specific items. And then to your question, if you do name a specific item and it's not existing at the time of death, then of course, you know, that's the end of that sentence. I mean, if you bequeath a Ford and at the time you don't own the Ford, then that's the end of that sentence.
Yeah, that's right.
You can only bequeath things that you have title to and that you own at the time of your death. And many people will dispose of assets, in some way before they die.
And if you were to name specific things, you can do that in a separate memorandum to the executor?
You can have a separate memorandum if you would like to have that as to tangible touch and feel items.
Right. Like your decoy
jewelry,
collection.
Decoys, golf clubs, guns, family heirlooms, things that we can pick up, touch, and feel. Tangible, personal property.
Okay.
Where the problem with the memo comes is that people go further than tangible personal property and they start talking about, well, my CD at the bank or my money in the safety deposit box, or property that I inherited from my grandmother, things of that nature. Those things are not appropriate in a memo. And so we have to be cautious of that. We have to be careful what folks are advised as to what they can put in a memorandum.
Okay. All right. We're talking about wills. And if you have questions, again, you can give us a call, 800-818-2255, 247-728-2353-4674. And we'll have more to come in a moment. And we're back with Cecil Harvell from Harvell and Collins. We're talking about wills, especially holographic wills.
Well, we are. And Ben, again, to get refocused on the holographic or all in the handwriting type will, I must say that probably the most significant and common defect that we have in these wills is the lack of contingency language. We just as human beings just don't think about, well, what if that child's not living? Okay. Well, what if this executor isn't alive? And we begin for instance, stepchildren. Adopted children, children that are born out of wedlock, children that are the product of long-term marriage and father and mother relationship, but yet were not the natural child of that father or mother. Okay. They assume that they are many times. I have so many folks who I ask the question, how many children do you have? Well, I have three children. And then I follow up, as a lawyer would do, with the question, now, are these all naturally born children? Mm-hmm. And then there's a pause.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's, well, now, no. Little John was
my
sister's child. But I've had him since he was knee-high to a grasshopper.
Yeah.
You know, and I finished paying for his college last year. Well, you know, we have to then do some legal drafting, which is not difficult for a lawyer at all. Very easy to do. That would then include this child.
Mm-hmm.
Or on the opposite of that, disinheriting a child. So the devil is in the details. And a lawyer is going to pick up on these contingencies and ask good questions. And those of you that are listening, you know, might not even really know what those questions might be.
Right. Right.
You know, because we just, as a tendency, do not really concentrate on these things. We feel that everyone will be right there in place when we go. You know, I've got two children, Ben. I know you know that. And I feel, well, I'll have two children when I die. Mm-hmm. Well, I hope and pray I do. But I might not.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And it's those mites that we have to take care of. And in a holographic will, they just aren't taken care of. For instance, back to the one yesterday, our will would say if my executor cannot or is unable to act,
right,
in addition to not being living, but just unable to act, then I appoint.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been so useful in this holographic will because the lady is so very elderly now and infirm.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, really, her son and daughter-in-law are handling this for her because she is unable to. But yet the court had no choice but to appoint her because she was named in the document and there was no alternative. There was no contingency. This is what we tend to run into more than anything else, is the lack of contingencies. So those of you that are listening, my friends that are listening, that want to sit at their kitchen table and write out a holographic will, and many people do, please think of these contingencies.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you want things to go if one of your children is not living? Name at least two, maybe even three executors. One, two, three.
Plan for the worst and hope for the worst.
Plan for these contingencies.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an area of the law where people think they know what it is. I mean, probably media-driven or Hollywood-driven about what they think a will is, but they really need to go and get the right advice.
I have a simple estate. I have very little money. I have one piece of property. I want all of it to go to my two children. I mean, this gentleman probably thought to himself, I have a couple pieces of property. I want them all to go to this charity, and I want my friend down the street to be my executor.
There you go. If you want to find out more, of course, call on the folks at Harvell and Collins, 726-2095, and we'll have more to come in a moment.
Okay.